I love a beautiful lawn. You love a beautiful lawn. Everybody loves a beautiful lawn, but they don't love how long it takes and how difficult it can be. And that is where True Green comes into play because it's the easiest and most affordable way to get that beautiful lawn. Let's be real. You've got plenty of other things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. So let True Green take care of all of that hard work while you get to do everything else that you want to do, like go play golf. Here's what you need to do. Visit truegreen.com, okay? It allows you to do you. Let them do the lawn care. And if you visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, that is all guaranteed. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. It's truegreen.com. Get started now.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your round three recap for this week's U.S. Open. And joining me to break it all down, it's Mark Immelman. Mark, happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday to you, Rick. I must say it was a lot of fun kind of having the day off and watching some golf on television. It was good fun
for me. It's different being on that side, isn't it?
It's quite refreshing. I've got to be honest with you. We were actually on vacation for a few days, my family and I, and we snuck away and got back today. Tropical storm Claudette ruined things for us down in the Gulf. But anyway, got back, had my dog on the couch next to me and the coffee and the TV and the rain and everything was perfect, man.
There you go. Well-deserved couple of days off and enjoying some golf action. And golf was fun on Saturday. We've got a trio at the top, Mark, that I don't think we all thought would be there. And then there is a chase pack forming behind those three. So let's start with the leaders at the top here. And I'll begin with the one who made all the noise on 18, Louis Oosthuizen, cards a 1-under 70. And the big exclamation point, Mark, is the 52-foot bomb he drops for eagle on 18. And it wouldn't be a major championship if Louis wasn't in the mix.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, everyone, and shame on me for not picking him this week. I mean, that's just ignorant on my behalf. But everyone speaks of Brooks Koepka being the major championship wizard. Well, look at Louis, what he does. I mean, he was a factor in the PGA a few weeks ago, second to last group. Now he's going to be in the final group. And he's just contended in so many. Of course, he's finished second in all of them. So he's got the runner-up Grand Slam or whatever you call that thing. And his game just seems to raise when the light is shining the brightest. And it's testament to him. It's testament to his attitude. It's testament to how he played, because today for a long while, I sort of looked at this going, oh no, Louis, you know, kind of backing up on Saturday. And all of a sudden, you know, he just hangs around. And all of a sudden he makes a timely birdie there. I think it was on 16, and then makes that eagle on 18. And all of a sudden he's in the final group and with a real chance now. So he did the whole major championship thing around a difficult venue perfectly. And, it's kudos, man, because, you know, this examination this week to me, as I've watched it, has been way more than just the physicality of the thing. You know, you've had to judge lies out of the rough. You've had to be able to stomach, you know, some funny bounces on greens, one hitting firm, one hitting soft. And so there's been so many mental and so many emotional challenges that have been brought to bear. And the guys atop the leaderboard have done sort of everything right. And again, like I say, shame on me for not picking Louis, because he's proved that he can do this in any season on any style golf course. I mean, think of it. He's played runner-up in all four major championships, and there are four vastly different examinations.
Yeah, that's one of the most impressive feats. Another impressive feat is the one major he did win. That was the 2010 Open Championship. He did it by 7 shots. He absolutely scorched the rest of the field. And since that victory, 5 runners up in major championships, with the most recent
just at the PGA Championship. I mean, it really is almost astonishing when you lay out the resume and you can see that this guy is literally just elevating his game in all of the biggest moments.
Yeah, you know, the rap on Louis is that he only has one PGA Tour victory, you know, but he's won around the world multiple times. And he's won at a canter from out front, and he's won chasing people down, and he spilled a few leads. But the thing about him is he is a top quality player that probably doesn't get the respect that he deserves. And then when he gets to the top, they're like, oh, this sweet swinging Louis with a beautiful rhythm. And that's kind of who he is. Mm-hmm. But the guy is a complete golfer. He putts it beautifully. He's got wonderful touch around the greens. He's a sound iron player, and I think he drives the ball long. He's surprising. He's longer than you think he is. It's like a tumbling sort of a ball flight that gets out there, and you can see he played alongside Matthew Wolf today, who outdrove him by some, but that didn't factor at all because Louis still found a way to cobble together a score that was lower than what Matthew did.
14 professional victories. If he pulls it off tomorrow on Sunday, it would be his first on American soil. Let's go to the co-leader who had the best round of the day. That would be Canadian Mackenzie Hughes, who followed up his Friday 67 with a Saturday 68. And I'm looking at his second nine, the back nine for Mackenzie Hughes, in which he birdied 11. He eagled 13, kind of Tiger-esque with that putt on 13. And then he puts another one on the board with a birdie on 18 to close his final nine in 4 under par.
Yeah, the way this golf course is sort of shaping up, especially from what we saw today, it's going to take something like that long bomb he hauled on 13 or the one that Louis made on 18. That's just the way this thing is sort of coming together right now, because it's appearing that as this golf course dries out, and in the morning it gets a little moisture and the rough can grow a little bit, but there's not a lot of heat. So the grass isn't growing really quickly. And so guys are able to play out of the rough by the looks of things, where early in the week they couldn't. So it's going to take a little something special. And Mackenzie, you showed that today. And speaking of something special, I mean, he showed his cards. Wasn't last year in the playoffs. It might have been the year before, where he had to get up and down out of a bunker at the BMW Championship to advance, I think it was, or maybe it was the Northern Trust. And he hits this bunker shot out there to like 6 feet above the flag and holds the putt down the hill, which wasn't easy at all. And then he sort of took another step forward in my estimations. I was there on hand when he won his first event down at the RSM Classic, and I was on the call there, and I was impressed by how he struck it, and I was impressed by the presence of mind that he had. But, you know, he's just a young, talented kid coming out, and you're like, okay, he won. Let's see where he goes from here. But, you know, he's proved himself since then, and he just hits the ball so heavy, you know, and so I can see why in a maritime-type place like Torrey, where it can be a little dense, the air, and the ball doesn't go as well, where he can hit the ball through the wind. You know, when he won down in Sea Island, it was in the fall, it was breezy and it was chilly, and it didn't look like the conditions affected his ball flight whatsoever. And I think it's just a matter of time before he, too, proves who he really is, because when he came out as part of the young Canadian squad, you know, they were dotted around colleges in the U.S. Like Edwin went to Louisville, and Corey Connors and Mackenzie went to Kent State. And so there were all these talented guys, but the pick of the litter really was Nick Taylor, who was at Washington, right? And he was the star. He was the number one ranked golfer in the world. But Mackenzie now is sort of showing who he really is. And I would sort of say, man, I would make an argument for the fact that he may be the most accomplished of the bunch of them. And certainly, you know, if things go his way tomorrow, that certainly will be the case.
It certainly will be. I have a couple of fun little nuggets here on Mackenzie Hughes. So Sean Zach of golf.com actually worked with Mark Brody on a column 18 months ago. The goal of that column, Mark, was to find the average player on tour. And believe it or not, that ended up being the 2019 version of Mackenzie Hughes, which is nugget number one. And nugget number two is The man who is currently co-leading the U.S. Open has missed the cut in his last five starts, so certainly did not come in any great form. Golf is a very strange game, as we have learned over the years, and Mackenzie Hughes is putting it together here.
Well, you see, this is why I don't like statistics that much, because they use stats to figure out who the average golfer on the PGA Tour was. Now, I don't know if this is a slight against Mackenzie Hughes or if this is like a compliment, but I'll tell you this much for free. Each and every one of us and all the folks writing these articles would happily be the average guy on the PGA Tour. Okay?
That's exactly
so
right.
Put no one to bed and say, this boy can go. And when it's his time, he's not afraid. He will not back down. He won that playoff on a Monday morning, chilly, in a four-way playoff. And I remember, I think Camilo Villegas was in there and Billy Horschel, perhaps. I get my names mixed up. But he went to sleep as a rookie, coming back in one in the morning. So he's going to take it. I don't think he's going to back down. And then as far as missing the cuts thing go, heck, we see this week in and week out where some guy just finds something for the week and they're all so good. That can oftentimes be the separator.
It certainly can. Our third man atop the leaderboard, Russell Henley. This, to me, I don't want to say is the most impressive round of the day, but I was impressed with what Russell Henley did. He had to sleep on the 36-hole lead at the U.S. Open. He came out, birdied his first hole of the day. He essentially alternated birdies and bogeys for the majority of the day. He finally gets in the clubhouse with an even par 71 mark. I thought there were moments in which this round could have gotten away from Russell Henley. I thought when he got into a few spots of trouble, he was able to extract himself from that trouble and to shoot even par on Saturday out of the final group at the U.S. Open is good work.
Yeah. Okay. Well, here's me. Here's my mea culpa. This morning, as I say, we were on vacation. So I woke up and it was a lovely spot. And I'm lying there in bed with a window open looking at the beach. And I'm just scrolling through golf Twitter, which I find awfully amusing at some of the... I nearly said an expletive that some people spout, you know, folks that have never been there, never been in a locker room, you know, just kind of are watching golf on TV and watching scoreboards, and then they're coming with opinion. And the beef was that Bland and Henley were going to capitulate and just go away. Mm-hmm. And I got the hair on the back of my neck up in the hugest way. And I sent the snarky tweet as if to say, all you guys need to get a bit of a grip. You know, these guys aren't going to go away. And the truth is, Richard Bland actually played pretty well, just got on the wrong side of a few holes and made a few soft bogeys. And Russell Henley, this dude's made $18 million plus dollars on tour. He's won three times. He won as an amateur on the Korn Ferry Tour, then the Web.com Tour. And his first event on the PGA Tour, he won, shooting, what was it, like 61 or something in the final round? He went and got this thing in the Sony Open. And Russell Henley lives just down the road from me. In fact, he's taken a lesson or two from me on the wedge game. He is good. And he plays the game kind of like wide Earp. You know, he sees the thing, he gets over the ball, he pulls the trigger. He sees the thing, he's no hanging around. He's not fazed by the moment whatsoever. When he was at Georgia with all of these other studs, Harris English and company, he was the one. And they'll all tell you that. And so when people are telling me Russell Henley's going to go away, I was like, you guys got no idea. And I'll tell you this for free. He might not finish it off tomorrow, but he is not going to fall over in front of you. That is for certain.
Yeah, I was impressed with what he was able to accomplish here on Saturday. Now, we've got some big dogs. Down.
Sorry,
let's recalibrate, Mark, because we've got some big dogs in the chase pack here who are not going to make it easy for Hughes, Louis, and Russell at the top. Let's start with Rory McIlroy, who matched Paul Casey's low round of the day, a 67, 4 under par. And this is what I find incredibly interesting. Here's a nugget from Ben Coley. Rory McIlroy has not been within two shots of the lead after 54 holes of a major since 2014, the last one he was victorious at, Mark. So we have not seen Rory McIlroy really contend this late in a major championship for quite some time. He has plenty of top tens that he's kind of quote unquote backdoored into, but he is right now in the thick of it for the first time in 7 years.
And aren't we all excited? You know, yes. That's the same thing about Twitter, because I saw that tweet from Ben Coley, who I'm good friends with. I think he's a fantastic writer. But now all these folks are coming out with Rory statistics. I'm like, you were the same folks just last year this time were saying, oh, he's unbelievable. He's going to win everything. Then you guys are like, where's Rory gone? He's making dumb decisions with his golf swing. And so the beat goes on. And now we've got a guy who really, if things go his way a little bit tomorrow, he could spread eagle the field. Because the way he looked like he was playing today, there was that element of irreverence about him. Like I saw when he was a kid. When he came out, he just teed the driver up and just swung away. Mm-hmm. And the thing came out the barrel with speed, and he never looked concerned about anything. When he had iron shots, he just fire away. There was never the play to the smart side of the flag thing. Then the way he putted too, he was so good around the greens. And I'm starting to see some of that today. I mean, that 67, everyone looks at the total. There are two key par putts he made in that round that kept that thing alive, because it was nearly the end of all of it on 15 after he hit that snap hook and the barranca down the left.
That's right.
And when I saw him save the five over there and there was that little fist bump, I was this is the guy I've seen, I've called. This is the guy that still to this day, we did a podcast, I think it was last year during lockdown, about greatest rounds or whatever. The best round I've ever seen with these two eyes was him shooting 64 to win the Arnold Palmer Invitational. It was free flowing. It was charismatic. He hit the ball however he wanted. He made long putts. He made saves. He chipped in once. It was virtuoso. And I saw a little sparkle in the eye today. So who knows? Maybe he can do this tomorrow where he gets out there and he goes, whatever, you know, I'm just going to swing free and see what happens. If that happens, I think he could go out and do another. It's going to take, 67 or so? What's he, 3 under? If he does that and gets to 7, I mean, that may be Rory. He might have another major championship.
He'll be out in the penultimate group with Russell Henley at 12:44. The only bogey-free round on Saturday went to our defending champion, Bryson DeChambeau, who, Mark, after opening with a 73, chances didn't look all that great. He backs it up with a 69, a 68. He finds something in his sleep. And I don't have to remind you that he was 2 shots back entering the final round at Winged Foot before he absolutely ran away with it.
Yeah. And I would say probably if there's somebody to beat right now, it's Bryson. And I'm sure Brooks doesn't want to hear that one. But I should stop because I've been critical of the old Brooks-Bryson fiasco. But to go around there bogey free today, to leave a number of shots out there, he missed a bucket load of putts. He just looks like it's coming to him easily. And somehow, like I was asked this question on HQ, maybe yesterday or whatever, they're like, what is the game for Bryson? Is it more mental or physical? And when things start going wrong, what can you pin it on? And I was like, Bryson has the strangest way of making everything physical. Even when his mind is going haywire, he will get into the numbers so much and he will talk about yardage and all this sort of stuff. It's almost like he doesn't give his brain time to wander into the white noise. And so it all becomes physical. It's like, I've got to make this 9 o'clock, 9 iron, and I've got to hit it with 2 fingers, and there's a puff of breeze off the right, and I've got to do this and this and that. And all of a sudden, it becomes a physical endeavor for him. So I don't think he gives himself time to get mentally discombobulated. And so that's what's fascinating about him, because there were times today it could have gone wrong. And he just kept going and kept going and kept going and didn't birdie 18. But still, the guy's primed, man. And
yeah,
and it appears that somehow the U.S. Open's become his thing, where it's like, I'm just going to bash the thing down there. I'm going to hit it around the green somewhere with a short club. And good on him. But the USGA going to have to come with something smart from now on if they want to defend. Because, you know, it was always tiger-proofing stuff. What Bryson's doing is it's almost exposing a U.S. Open layout to say, watch me, bum and gouge. I'm going to get at you with 1, 2, 3 under. I do that 3 or 4 days in a row, and I'm likely to win your trophy.
Yeah, that's certainly true. He described the strategy in his post-round interview with Steve Sands as well, kind of alluding to the same type of thing. We don't have to get into the Brooks and Bryson thing, but going out and winning your second U.S. Open championship in a row would certainly go a long way to shutting up any haters that you might have. John Rahm, three shots back, Mark. And this was a little bit unfortunate because he got a hair unlucky on 14. This is probably, if he does not make up three shots and go on to win this golf tournament, this major championship, he's probably going to look back on the 14th hole on Saturday. He kind of gets in a tough spot in a fairway bunker. He has to kind of just chip it out, just move it forward, advance it. And then he hits the stick. He literally, it gets caught up in the flag. Probably doesn't spin back to the way that he wants. He eventually misses a short putt when the dust settles. He cards a six, which is a double bogey. And those two shots are certainly going to be missed as he goes to bed this evening.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll make my John Rahm quip, and then I want to tell you the truth about the whole thing, in my opinion. He will be around tomorrow afternoon late. He's just playing too well not to be. And stuff's going to have to go horribly awry for him not to be. And I'm struggling to see that happen. I've been wrong before. But here is the thing. You talk about that break that he had that turned into a double bogey six. This should be the eye-opener for all of us, every single one of us who are pundits or claim to be or comment on the game or fans or whatever the case might be, to say any individual who's won one of these things, let alone multiple, how many things have gone right for them and how hard it is to win an event, let alone multiple events, let alone multiple major championships. Here's a guy in John Rahm who's arguably maybe the best golfer in the world right now. He has zero of these things on his resume, right? Yeah. And, you know, it could be just because of a ball getting wrapped up in a flagstick. And that now you, this is when you look at Tiger Woods going, goodness gracious me. I mean, this is superhuman. You look at anyone, McIlroy with, what's he got? Four of them. Spieth with four. Brooks with four. I mean, Nick Faldo, who is a genius, has only got six of these things. And it should start to say to you, hold on a second, we got to be very, very careful when we're saying to folks, well, when's he going to win a major? You know, when's Finau going to win again? Blah, 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 blah. It's just, it's a difficult thing. And there's so many factors that are brought to bear. And yes, that may be the reason why he doesn't win. Who knows? Maybe he can overcome the thing, because that's what you have to do to win. You've got to overcome some setbacks. But it's what golf represents. And to me, it's what makes golf great.
One more before we hit our break. Matthew Wolf, 73, his worst round of the week. I think expectations were kind of all over the place and admittedly low for Matthew Wolf this week. He is currently 2 under par. He is right there with John Rahm and Scottie Scheffler, just 3 off the pace. It is seeming that maybe in a kind of a lesser sense, these U.S. Opens are setting up pretty well for Matthew Wolf as well. They went 1 and 2, Bryson and Wolf, at Winged Foot, and both of them lurking here with 18 holes to go.
Yeah, I'm hoping he plays well. But then again, I think for the lessons that perhaps he's trying to learn, and I haven't talked to him, so I don't know for sure. I've read transcripts like you have and like everyone listening to this has, and I've read tweets and stuff. You know, I think being emotionally complete for Matthew Wolf happens when he fails once or twice and then realizes he's going to be okay. When he has the big misstep, when it means something and it stings for a few days or a few weeks or whatever, then he comes back and goes, damn, man, I'm still Matthew Wolf and I'm going to be okay. But when you start to own these things so much that they define you, then you become the individual who's sitting by himself in the hotel room going, I haven't won and I'm not meeting sponsor obligations and I'm letting people down and et cetera, and insert whatever it likes, because your brain goes to the weirdest of spots. So do I want him to win? Absolutely. What a story. If he doesn't, I think it might be better for him, because the one thing about Matthew Wolf is he left college as a sophomore, right?
Yeah. I think that's
he
right.
He won how many times in his – I need Collier. He won like how many times in his career? 11 times or something, including an NCAA championship, individual championship. The guy is not used to losing. And then he came out on tour and got himself a quick win, and the world was his proverbial oyster. Then he loses a bit, and the game gets hard, and life gets tough, and he's learning these lessons on the fly. And let me tell you what, when you are making big dollars and having all these obligations and stuff to do, to have to learn these lessons, that's not a fun place to be. And I'm not surprised at all he suffered with whatever he's been suffering with. So if he wins, fantastic. If he doesn't win, I think perhaps it could be a blessing in disguise. I really do.
He was your 2019 individual NCAA champion, a bunch of wins at Oklahoma State. Mark, we've got to look at the betting board from our friends at William Hill and try to figure out who's going to win this golf tournament. And I've got something special to tell you. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
And we're back. All right, Mark, it is Saturday evening of the U.S. Open. There are 18 holes to be played. And I have to tell you, Louis Oosthuizen is the favorite to win this event.
Have William Hill lost their minds?
William Hill has installed Louis Oosthuizen as a plus 375, the shortest odds on the board, right behind both Rory McIlroy and Bryson DeChambeau. They are 5-1. Russell Henley, 7.5-1. Mackenzie Hughes, 9-1. So really, the two of the three golfers in the final group not getting much respect from William Hill, while Louis Oosthuizen getting the majority of the respect, and they don't want to get burned on Rory or Bryson potentially winning this thing.
I find that curious. I really do. I would have figured that Bryson would be the favorite. I would have figured Rory would have grabbed the lion's share of the attention over there. But Louis, I don't know what they're seeing, because I'm not sure a whole bunch of folks are going to be scrambling out to go buy Louis Oosthuizen tickets, are they?
It's going to be I do not believe so. No, yeah. I was surprised when I clicked this link as well. I was expecting Rory Bryson. That's why I thought you'd get a kick out of Louis being the favorite on a Saturday night.
I thought the surprise you said for me was I was going to get one of those sound bars that you've been bragging about.
That would be a great surprise.
Or maybe my Tony Finau pick, you said to me, I don't sweat it. We're going to give you a whole bunch of dollars for the one and done contest anyway. Yeah.
Nope. Nothing that good. Just that Louis is the favorite.
Yeah, you know what? As I look at those over there, I said it. I think Bryson's the favorite. My head says Bryson. My heart says Rory. My heart says Louis. You know, there's for me so many storylines on the go here, and I'll tell you this much: I couldn't really pick anyone right now. And I will, but I will tell you this: I feel like it's going to take one special shot. There's likely to be someone who has a horrible misstep at the wrong time, just like a U.S. Open should be. And so for all of those folks on social, I've read so too much social media over the last couple of days.
Yeah, you got to get back to work. You're reading Twitter too much.
For all of these folks, and if you're listening, come on now, that have been critiquing Torrey Pines as a venue. first off, have you ever been there? And secondly, what right do you have to critique a golf course that whenever we go there, it just produces the most incredible scenarios? You look at the winners this place has produced: Tiger Woods in a major championship, John Rahm, Justin Rose, Jason Day. I mean, the list is endless. You know, the cream essentially largely rises to the top. But the cool thing about this place too is that there'll always be that funny story: the Rocco Mediates, the Richard Bland. Goodness gracious, I was pulling for him. And so tomorrow there's going to be a little bit of that. There'll be a Mackenzie Hughes hanging in there. And as keen to see this David versus Goliath thing that this incredible golf course is going to produce tomorrow afternoon.
We are going to have one heck of a Sunday recap, because no matter who wins this golf tournament, it is going to be amazing. It's going to be fun to talk about. It's going to be well-earned and well-deserved. You're not going to backdoor or fall backwards into this major championship. My heart says Rory. My head says Bryson. We shall see. But Mark, 18 holes to go.
One thing real fast for my Columbus people, Columbus, Georgia, if anyone's listening to this, because Russell Henley, now we've adopted him because he lives here with his wife, Teal. If Russell wins, we might have a public holiday on Monday in Columbus, Georgia, because it's such a great golfing town. And he's come in here and folks have just embraced him, and he plays golf at both clubs. He comes and practices with my college golf team. He's just a guy. You know, and he's super likable that way, and he plays the game easy. So if he wins, they may shut down our portion of Georgia for a few days.
Columbus, Georgia, if you're listening, and Russell Henley can pull this off, maybe a little welcome back parade for him when he gets home on Sunday night or Monday. All good. I love it. Okay. We will be back, of course, Sunday evening to break down our latest major champion. But for now, let me thank producer Jacob. He does all the hard work behind the scenes. That right there, it's Mark Immelman. You can find him at Mark_Immelman. And you can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.